Welcome to Star from the Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games, of an SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us, we have Talkcast every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone to dial 605-562-0444, just follow the directions, the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web, just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for quality 17702, or you can also look for SFU on call or Star from the Universe on call, and you'll find us there. But of course, if you want the best online experience, just go to twitch.tv/switch.tv/SFU on call, and you will find us there. You will join the chat room and join the other people just talking. I'm happy to discuss any questions that you guys have, hopefully. There's certain things I will not answer, of course. But anyway, moving on forward, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you can follow me on Twitter or X or whatever they're calling it this week. That's sfuoncall, same spelling. Also, you can follow my personal account, which is Paul France, P-A-U-F-R-A-N-Z. Just to tell you, just to let you know, I rarely post anything. Also, Franz Games, F-R-A-N-Z, is my business account. There you can find out what's going on with SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. So, moving onward and forward to the news of A to B this week. Not much going on there. It's been pretty quiet over there. But, you know, Steve Patrick is still busy working on the Orion Master Starship book. And also, this week, and found in the online store is F&E Countersheet Tango. It's only $9, and there are 280 counters for just $9. The new sheet from Tactical Operations includes over 100 new battleships never seen in F&E before. This sheet includes battleships, stellar fortress bases, and the first win ships. Moving on, we're forward to the online tournament, Sapphire Star Tournament 15. We have 6 out of 8 games completed. We have none on round two. Those are round one games. Round two, we have a game that shall be played tomorrow night at 7 o'clock Eastern Time, is my understanding. So if you want to, you can check them out. Also, that's the only round two game that is currently set to be played. There's a possibility of other round two games, because other than the two, there's at least another one or two games that could be actually played, and I've not seen any announcements of said fact. Moving onward and forward, we have the library report. You know, nothing when it comes to SFB Online or the FedCom Online libraries, both of them are relatively static. So with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, as the one and all Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we have Gary. Hey, Gary.
Hello.
And we got Jeff. How you doing, Jeff?
Good evening, everyone.
And of course, last and certainly not least, Doug. How you doing, Doug?
I'm here. How's everybody doing tonight? Hopefully nobody has the flu and going around.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, we don't need another round of that, do we?
Nope.
No, we do not. Especially when you get to see it go through the rest of the family first and you know it's coming and it beats your little butt for 2 days straight. But that's just me. The plus side of having a family,
and then
you get to see what's coming,
and then try to move in the middle of it. Really?
That doesn't help.
Of it was that, no, there was one plus side to it because I saw it coming. You know, I changed my diet appropriately to prep for the incoming flu, and it wasn't as horrible as it could be. You know, so without going into detail, but you know what I mean, I mitigated it a bit.
Yes.
It still beat my ass, but yeah. It wasn't like, hi, surprise, whack. The first in the family. Yeah. So, how's everybody else doing there?
Well, I'm coming off a really long day, but yeah, I'm doing good. Unfortunately, this morning my day started before dawn, and
no, don't do that.
Maintenance troubles being what they are, or just that drum beat of one darn thing after another.
Understood. Mm. Zooks, please don't.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, the local Zinni is
I hear
looking around, and it's going, oh, can I go there, Pop-Pops? And then going, no. Zooks, my boy, I don't think so. There, back up. Okay. But
what's on the menu for tonight?
Well, as you wanted to continue the discussion of what we started last week, which I think, you know, was pretty good. Unfortunately, the one thing that I wish I could have done, I got busy with other things. And of course, also this past weekend, I went camping. So I didn't think about SFB. What think about what SFB? I had a beautiful forest, you know, chilling out, you know, looking at the beautiful leaves as, you know, because it's autumn, all those leaves are changing color. It's this beautiful thing.
You have my envy. I would have loved to have unplugged by going camping.
Yeah, wife and I do try to do it once a month. We realized that back in July that we have to take a pause between July and probably September. Just because of it gets way too hot, and our little teardrop trailer has no air conditioning. So if it's uncomfortable, it is really uncomfortable, and it's not exactly easy, you know.
Right.
So yeah, I didn't mind the heat that much, but you know, it is what it is. And when you go to sleep without air conditioning, when it really gets warm out, then it makes it hard, because it's like the time I visited Costa Rica. When I went to visit Costa Rica to go to my sister-in-law's wedding, and at this point, that's like 30 years ago. The place we were staying out, you know, in Costa Rica, air conditioning? No, they don't have air conditioning. So I'm laying there, you know, and I'm just sweating up a storm as I'm trying to sleep, and to say I didn't get the best sleep in the world with that. So
oh gosh, waking up hot is horrible.
Yeah, well, I remember actually when I was younger, down my shore house where we didn't have air conditioning, but what I would do is I actually sleep on the cold floor, and then I just lay in front of the fan. We had this one for each bedroom. We had one big box fan that you could actually you put in the doorway, and it draws to push the, you know, cooler air from the middle of the house into the bedrooms, you know. So they worked, you know. And during the day, what you did is you spent most of the day in the drink, you know, in the Chesapeake Bay. In my case, kept me cool. I was happy. But anyway, back to the topic for this evening. Well, I was to, yes.
Actually, Paul, do you have a second?
Yes.
Speaking of topics, I just wanted to mention that about a day or two ago, Steve Cole and Mike West started up topics about basically the fishing around for people to post lists of SSDs that might be needed for either a module C6R or a module C4R. Oh. So. At some point, I was wondering whether or not that might be a topic worth diving into more detail.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely. I think what we can do is we can do that next week, because I think that'd be an excellent topic, especially because they're looking for ships right now, correct?
But right now,
that's what's on the list. Yeah. We'll have some chips to talk about if we wait a little bit.
And additionally, I'd actually want to look, see what's currently there. And after I get a look at what's currently there, then have an idea of what I think we need. And obviously I'll add my, anything that I think was not previously pointed out, which is of course, invariably I got nothing to offer because other people have, added things to the list way before me. Because they're got a better sense of what is needed than I do. But yeah, Gary, I would love to talk about it next week. I think that'd be perfect. Possibly, heck, it might even possibly later tonight, but I want to continue the one discussion which Doug and I was having last week, and he wanted to continue the discussion. I thought that would be a good idea just for a sense of continuity.
So, why don't you remind us what we were talking about last week, okay, for those that didn't tune in?
For those who did not tune in, or some people who were in a very loud bar that might not have been able to hear it all, not mentioning any names.
Guilty.
That was a pretty loud bar. But anyway, okay.
Yeah, you have my apologies.
Oh, it's okay. You know, hey, it happens. I'm glad you realized that the situation was untenable. And
yes, it was not tenable.
But okay, getting back to it. Okay, we're talking about this actually, play by mail, play by email. In generic terms, is a form of asynchronous play. And the one, an idea I came up with, which I thought was an interesting idea, because of it's a combination of an MMORPG like EVE Online and asynchronous play like Starfleet Warlord, though it's not a replacement for Starfleet Warlord. It's a brand new system. And of course, because it's it would be an MMORPG. What that means, it's a never-ending game. You know, it's not like Starfleet Battles, or as I said, Starfleet Warlord, or any other game in that fashion, in that you have a start, you have a finish. You know, finish being whoever, sometimes whether it's a set number of turns, or whoever reaches a certain victory condition.
Right.
You know, it's neither of those. Because, you know, as I said, it's MMORPG. And the tough part about this is the combination of the two that I, you know, came up, which is, of course, since this is an MMORPG, it's continuously going. So previously, when it comes to play by email and those kind of play, any kind of asynchronous play, usually what it, you have the beginning, you have the beginning part of the turn, of a quote unquote turn, whatever, you know. And what you do during that is you play, okay, you give your orders, i.e. what actions you're going to be doing, where are you going to move your units, whatever those units happen to be, whether they're people or ships or what, you know. And then after that, then in asynchronous play, then you execute those orders, you know, whether it's movement or a combination of movement and actions or just actions. Now, so the definitive line of how things are even is each turn is a certain period of time. So when it comes to movement, there you have each unit has a certain speed, and that speed is how far that the unit can go in hexes for that turn. So that's the definitive line of when it comes to what's even what's fair is that everyone has a certain amount of time. You know, the ships that can go on this turn can move so much on this turn. They can do so many actions or certain specific actions during the turn. Now,
right,
when you bring in an idea of an MMORPG and asynchronous play, that's when things go really woo. Because an MMORPG, what is the one thing that is the difference? What makes it even between all concerned when all is playing within that universe? To me, that is time. And that is that with asynchronous play, having an asynchronous play and that live universe, the thing is time. A ship can only go so fast in that physical period of time. You know, whether you know it can move, let's say, one star steps or one parsec per day. Now, that to me, that's the evening factor. That's what makes it an even playing field for all. That means whether you are able to submit orders 5 times a day or once a day or zero, you know, only or maybe once a week, time is the limiting factor. For example, if you have a person who wants to just put in their asynchronous orders, I say, okay, here's my orders. These are my ships. They're going to run, boom. And they'll keep going until either you submit a new set of orders for that universe and then have them continue on, or you check, that's the only way is to actually have to adjust those orders to change it. Or, in the case of a ship, you have a ship going from point A to point B, you can say, okay, the ship will stop when it gets to point B. And that's going to take, 48 hours or whatever, whatever the actual real and what the time is in real time. So it doesn't matter whether a person submits, 4 times a day or once a day or whatever, it's even. Now, obviously, the big issue with that is when it comes to conflicts and having it so that it's even between all concerned. Now, the question is that, okay, when you let it go, when you say, okay, I don't have time to log in for another week, what happens with those units? You can either have it so those units continue forward, or you can, in my mind, it's up to the player. The player can have them presume safety and obviously automate the fighting of battles. And this is what Starfleet Warlord does. In that, if you set up, okay, I'm moving from point A to point B. Here's my movement route. Bum, 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 bum. And that during that route, you run into another corporation's units. Then one of two things happens. Either you go and you fight it out, and either you lose or you win, or you set it hits what's called an attack percentage, and that is it compares how big of a force you have versus the force that you're meeting up with, and then you go, yeah, I go, no. And they'll have what's called a bounce. A bounce is basically goes into the hex.
Is basically when the rules of engagement on both sides say no.
Or in this case, one side says no. Because of the way Warlord works at the moment is that each player's turns are executed one at a time. I had when I first acquired the rights to Starfleet Warlord and all the materials that I was set up, I had a crazy, crazy idea, which I never implemented because of basically it would require me to completely re-implement the engine, which I originally had planned on doing. And after many years of not doing it and thinking harder on upon said issue, I went, you know, the biggest issue that I re-implement the engine would be is getting it right. Because if the numbers don't turn out, I can't say the same because part of it's random. But if like the monsters don't move the way that the monsters usually move, or the NPC, you know, non-player corporations play differently, people will notice and they're going to complain and they're going to say you totally screwed up the game. Because invariably, people don't give you much grace. You know, especially when you mess.
No, particularly when you're monkey or something they're used to.
Adapt.
And you know, or
adapt. You say, how dare you?
Yeah, I know. Something that you.
How dare you suggest that I adapt?
But yeah, when you mess up a game that they love, they get kind of upset.
Imagine that.
I know. Really?
It's like you're shooting their darlings or something. I mean, it's all you're really doing is closing loopholes, patching exploits, and nerfing their special favorites.
Actually, that's the funny part.
It doesn't benefit me.
Right. Oh, exactly. If it doesn't benefit you, you don't like it. Actually, that was a funny thing that we were talking about today. It's our quarterly meeting, and my, you know, the vice president was talking about clients and so forth, and making sure that our software, because it's a service, making sure that if you change behavior of the software, that it has an option not to be changed. And then, of course, he came back and went, you know, that's not always the case. You know, certain cases where the behavior needs to change, for example, a bug. And the one thing that came to mind, and I did not express this out loud to him, which was other people, a bug to you is another person's feature. And I have experienced this.
I think that's the truth.
I've experienced this not firsthand, not for an online client, but from a previous job I had, where you know where somehow the one of our clients we had discovered this bug, and he looked at that like, huh, I see how this behaves when I do this. That's kind of weird. It really shouldn't be do it that way, but. Oh, now if I can rely on that being like that, then I can do this. That's like
and exploit the system.
Well, and make that bug into a feature. And that, and I know there's the whole adage from developers like, it's not a bug, it's a feature. And in some cases, the clients will actually take the bug and make it into a feature. I saw that and it was shocking to me, but I brought it up just because that is definitely it, because there are some, I know there's some bugs in the engine. I fixed one of them. There's another one I really need to sit down and fix, which has to do with the Q Empire. I forget what they're called. It's not quarries. basically, it's a special empire where you actually can design your own ships. But there's a bug in that, and it will actually crash if you select a certain a description for your ship, meaning how it's put together. So I that's one of those
Yeah.
ones that people ran into, and they stopped loading on. They stopped trying to purchase that ship because they would crash the engine.
Whoops.
Hey. And there was another one too, actually, I did fix. There was one actually I fixed, and but it was good, you know. So.
Well, from someone who put a colon where he should have put a semicolon in about 25,000 lines of code once upon a time, and didn't find it until 2 months after the scripts had gone live on a production environment and nobody was getting any data, I can't say much.
Understood.
Of course, this is also in the era before good linting and code syntax highlighting was common.
Oh, understood. Understood. Though, yeah, I actually had a decent editor called Brief. While I was doing my development in DOS. That's talk about way back in the day. Yes, for those of you, DOS, single task operating system, not multitasking, single task. Yeah.
For those of you under 50.
Oh, don't get me started thinking about that. I'm not sure how many
I
people.
still have my DOS operating manual around or something.
Hey, there are certain things that DOS is just awesome at, and there really hasn't been an improvement on what DOS could do for certain things, particularly when you're dealing with what amounts to single-threaded, single-task operations where you don't need a lot of stuff floating out in the ether, and you need to do the calculations locally.
Oh yeah, agree. Oh, agreed, agreed. And then in DOS days, you had the TSR, terminate and stay resident programs, you know, which was.
Oh yeah, and writing batch files that are almost as complicated as real programs. Remember doing
Oh,
that with
there were still.
checking error codes and all kinds of nonsense.
Oh, that reminds
All
me.
the little tricks.
Oh, that's one thing that I listen to this one. Podcast called Floss Weekly, and it's based about open source. And one thing they do at the very end of it is they ask the person, you know, what's your favorite editor and what's your favorite scripting language. And when some people say Bash, I go, you know, Bash is okay, but it's not really a programming language. It really is not.
Bash is not a programming language. Bash is a scripting language. It's not exactly the same thing.
True. And some of the one thing I've always said that I hate about Bash as an overall scripting language is it doesn't have real functions.
No.
No. And that's what that has gotten me into trouble a few times because I'm used to dealing with functions where you have like three parameters and you always pass in three parameters. While in Bash, if you can have possibility of three parameters, it basically treats a function the same as a command line. Just here to execute this. So if something's empty,
Yeah.
you don't have that parameter. You can't have like the first parameter being empty. Not that's what's caused me grief. But anyhow, getting back to the discussion here, which is the interesting idiosyncrasies of such an MMORPG, which is okay, the big issues that are in place. One, what do you do so that you can basically progress in the game relatively safely, and still have it so it's asynchronous play that you don't have to constantly be looking in on, well, you don't have to constantly give it directions, you know, every single day. And it becomes almost real time where you have to do that. Because I know with EVE Online, what happens is that if you want to, you can have your ship park basically inside a base, and it will for the most part be safe. Obviously, oh crap! Hold on. Looks like Doug got disconnected. You there, Doug?
Yay.
Cool.
I'm here.
Hey, welcome back.
Yay.
Okay, you probably missed what I was mentioning, which is how to have it so that a person can play the game relatively safely and not basically get themselves kicked, you know, killed. While trying to play the game.
You know, the closest I can think of with an analog is a couple of old BBS era door games. One's Trade Wars 2002, and it was asynchronous in that you got a number of turns every day. You played your turns, and if you weren't online, then you had a default defense response.
Mm-hmm.
There was another game. It was a 4X kind of game, similar to the original Master of Orion, but it was more text-based, where you would send mm-hmm. orders, and your ships, when the system would process, would travel as far as they could travel, perform whatever duties if they got there in time, and then send back reports. And you could log in any given time during the day, but up until the time the server ran the process, you could review and change your orders. Or if it's been an update, you could update things as well with the next stage. But the thing is that you could present orders that would persist past the next update cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
I can't remember the name of that one, but it's one of two things. Either you set up a finite resource to use up when you're actively sending orders, or you make sure you send orders that can be applied in a proxy-like fashion.
Mm-hmm. Right. And actually, this reminds me of certain games. At least I've heard them that from 3 minutes ahead. And that is the whole idea of you have generals who will give their orders out, you know, to, you know, their lieutenants or whatever, which will then tell the troops to do such and such. But there's a possibility of, you know, the but the general itself can't micromanage. It doesn't have full control over his troops, i.e. tell him, this is exactly where you go. This is, okay, he tells the talents, this is what I want you to do. And then the group will do that in the best way they know how. And it might not match exactly what the general wants, but it's not like how some of the games are today, where you are the general, you know, of the battlefield, but you also micromanage it. So you tell almost each troop or each unit where to go and what to do. While the other one is
why they're in the handbasket.
Right. And the whole idea being with the other one is to simulate basically real life. Because in a real world scenario, when you have a general telling its troops, okay, this is what I want you to do, the general doesn't know exactly how the troops are going to do it. Yeah, and in most part, the general doesn't care as long as they accomplish the task what they've set the squad to do, or at least that regiment to do. And then, you know, the head of the regiment that figured tells the individual squads, okay, what do you need to be doing? You know, and then the squad leaders themselves say, okay, this is how we're going to do it. You know, the whole idea is this is the simulation of that whole thing.
Yeah.
Command and control, command and confusion.
Mm-hmm.
Log of war. These are just some things. But yeah, there's a lot of games out there like that where you have like command and control issues, and you have like a fog of war kind of simulation thing where, you know, you give your orders to somebody and there's a percentage chance that they won't actually try to do it. They'll fail, they won't act, or they'll do something wrong.
Right, right.
Always a risk.
And, you know.
Mm-hmm. and
one of the things is like, I think you're mixing genres. When, if you want to try to simulate an EVE Online experience, I mean, there's plenty of games out there and a lot of old play-by-email games that deal with like Galactic Conquest.
Oh, yeah.
And
but,
stuff like that.
But
And the thing is, with something like EVE, it's an MMORPG. It's not quite a first person. It is a first-person shooter in some senses, but it's also an economic game. It's mm-hmm. a manufacturing game. It's a resource gathering game. It's an exploration game.
Right.
But it's still first-person in actual play. It is essentially a role-playing game because you're only able to play one character at a time. You might have these big space navies out there and they have these, you know, record-breaking monetary battles where they burn the most real money world amount of spaceships and stuff, but that's because it's cooperative of thousands of players coming together at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a play-by-email game, you're dealing with a lot of different units very often.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and, you know, and I think it's really kind of not a good niche to try to compare the two to come up with something different. I think, really, if you wanted to do something different, it really should be completely from scratch. That's just my opinion on that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and yeah.
Well, it is from scratch, in that it's the idea of it when it comes to the main idea here is it runs in an ever-living system, an ever-running game. It always is constantly running. And then you give your orders based on your time and so forth into the system, and it will do those orders. And obviously, if you want to, you can update the orders as much as you possibly want to, I like to update it to do this. But the limiting factor, as I said, is time. As in how fast ships can go and so forth is limited by the time it is, that it goes. It's not like you can say, okay, I want to have a ship move 6 hexes and just, and just have a player say, okay, basically, as you pointed out last week, which is, them running through 4 turns. Well, that's because of each turn is considered a certain period of time. And so he's actually running four, he's going 4 times as fast as everybody else. And that's unfair. And that's why I figure the whole idea of time being, actual physical time being the limiting factor when it comes to movement and actions and things like that. And for a constantly living game, running game, like EVE Online as an MMORPG. Now, but have the detachment factor of asynchronous play. Meaning that you can control as many ships as you want, and that's fine, but you have to tell them where to go. And you can't, in the case, depending, I'm thinking at the moment is that you don't give, it's not hex based, it's more of physical space based, that also being the limiting factor. And I'm not sure, and this would probably be on a 2D map. Obviously it could be 3D, but 2D is always easier to deal with than 3D maps. And in that, have it so that, that the ships can only go so fast without, and going so far in a certain period of time. And how the interactions would take place and how the people that actually would do that, I haven't figured those idiosyncrasies down, because obviously it probably would be somewhere along the lines of Starfleet Warlord in having the idea of a bounce, where you run into another force, but in that force you realize that, oh, I'm way outclassed, and instead of sitting there and fighting and dying, that it will bounce and you will either back up from that position or reverse course for a certain period of time or whatever. That actually in theory could be a function of the player. When you bounce, how far do you want to reverse course and run away?
Well, there's a thing in EVE, for instance. You're basically, if you meet another force, another player, or another group, you basically run away, and you're only going to get engaged involuntarily if you are pinned.
Right.
Whereas in like Starfleet battles, you really don't have a pinning factor.
Mm-hmm.
The only pinning factor in Starfleet is scenario.
Right. And
if this scenario says you need to fight over thing X.
Right.
Otherwise, if you meet in an open space environment, you can run away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your bounce in Warlord.
Mm-hmm.
But in Eve, your ships can be pinned. And while that can be counteracted, it's usually not something that's set up for with combat ships. They're usually set up to pin other ships and not worry about being pinned.
Right.
The other thing that you do in EVE is you just dock up in the neutral station.
Right.
If you have a neutral station available and you're outclassed and you are essentially trapped in a system because there's forces on each gate going out, then maybe we'll dock up and stay there and hope the other people go away.
Right.
but there's different things to it. And it's and the thinking of between the two different systems isn't really applying as well. I think it's kind of a, you know, not a good mix.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to like the Eve thing, I think what you need to settle on is the scale that you want to work it on.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to work it as a one person thing, or do you want to work it as this person has this corporation and this, that, and the other in it?
That's true.
Because, you know, I think Eve did do a, I think the developers of Eve did do a condensed version of the game, but it was one where you could be more strategic and mm-hmm. it was meant to be played on the phone, but right. it wasn't really a space combat game in the same sense that Eve is. So, you know, and I'm not sure if that was turn-based or if it was like immediate, like third-person play. So,
mm-hmm.
there's that. I think if you're really going at it from scratch, the first thing to consider is what's your scale of play.
Right.
You know,
oh, agreed.
Is it corporate leader? Is it single player? Because that's, you know, even a single player MMORPG.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even though you can have the mass space battles and you can have the mass resource gathering and corporations that can pump out all sorts of stuff, those things are all made of players.
Mm-hmm.
Every single thing in that game is made. Well, okay, not every single thing, but the vast majority of the economics and the stuff that is built is made by players.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, something like Starfleet Warlord, it's not. It's you're a fleet commander,
right.
basically. You're commanding various fleets and sending them out to go do things, and they do these things on an autonomous set of like orders.
Correct.
So, yeah, I think it's really something that maybe we should sit down like on a dedicated full day and kind of bounce ideas around until something kind of coagulates. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
for something like that, I mean, I've been bouncing around ideas for, you know, doing something with an MMORPG kind of setup for a while. And, you know, one of the things that you haven't looked at yet that, you know, I could print out for you is a short set of rules to try and simplify, you know, combat and other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But as a very easily codable thing, which could also be done tabletop. So, but again, that's something that I think would be a good investment of time to sit down and just hash out over a day or two, maybe a few weekends,
mm-hmm.
to get a basic beginnings of what you really want to do.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Yeah. Well, obviously, the first stage of
we can talk about it while I'm moving this weekend if you want to come out.
Well, as I said, I will be there on Saturday. I will be there on Saturday to help you move.
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting to tomorrow, hopefully. Just driving me insane with that part.
Understood.
Frustrating. But if that changes, I'll let you know.
Okay, will do.
But we should be able to start moving tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
Saturday and Sunday and all next week.
Cool.
But no, that's kind of my two cents on it. I think it really needs to be, you know, set your scale first. And I think everything else then can kind of start to flow from that.
Yeah, but I think it's not just scale, but what do I want the game to be overall? Do I want it to be more like EVE Online, which basically people can do with it what they want to a certain degree, you know? They can be, you know, out for just combat. Or is it purely an economic system that they want to do? Or do I want to have it so it's more of a focus? Okay, this is what the game is about. You know, it's about gaining as much territory as possible, building your empire to be as huge as possible, you know. That kind of thing.
Well, when you start talking about that, then you're talking more about, you know, a strategic level game,
right?
And well, less about a personal level game,
right? Right.
And that's the difference. I mean, Warlord is strategic. Mm-hmm. Eve is single player ish.
But even strategic level games have, okay, the thing is with EVE Online is that it's, the last three letters of that R is RPG, role-playing game. You're playing a character in the game. And that character can, you know, be a rogue, you know, go out and fight fights. It could be, you know, a scout that goes out and just searches for things. Could be an entrepreneur where it's trying to go out and mine things and gathering up more and more money and so forth, and basically going that route, you know, which is, you know, that's part of it, which is that single person role playing game. It's just, it's, you know, it's massive. It's within this big, very big universe. Versus, you know, you being the role of emperor or general or whatever, which are in control of this fleet of ships and are, you know, want to take over the universe or not even want to take over the universe. Just need to acquire planets and so forth for purely for economic reasons, so that you can maybe build more ships or just to build up this huge economy, which, you know, in other words, you can still kind of play it at like any game out there, you can place it within the context of a story, because the game, playing on the game itself, tells a story. Now obviously some of them are more obvious than others when it comes to, you can see a story, you know, occurring as part of the gameplay versus playing a game of cards, you know, that less lends itself to the whole idea of playing a character and telling a story through your playing of a card game. Meaning, when I say card game, I mean, you know, 52 cards, you know, cards, you know, regular deck of cards, not like Magic the Gathering or something along those lines, or even a game that's specifically tuned to be a role-playing game, you know. But anyhow,
Paul?
Yes.
So I'm thinking about, there's a game called No Man's Sky. It's like, I guess it's still, and also there's like games like Elite Dangerous and so on, where you're pretty small and the universe is pretty big, but you're basically the degree in which you engage with the universe changes, and also because developers of No Man's Sky have been adding more features like ships and so, like larger ships and so forth, like freighters and so forth, and like you can recruit computer-controlled pilots to fly other ships and so forth in your squadron. But at the core of it, basically, you're just like one guy dude in a spacesuit, the person in a spacesuit walking around, and can only fly one ship at a time. But you have various choices in terms of whether or not you want to be a space pirate, or if you want to trade, or if you want to take up mercenary missions, or if you want to do XYZ or whatever. When it comes to the Star Trek universe, I think it sounds like one of the options would be almost like a level up from the Prime Directive RPG book. Because in Prime Directive, whether it's GURPS or D20, whatever, you're creating a character and you're playing on it. But you're pretty much, you might need like a group to be able to create a bridge crew, even for like a free trader or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But for the game that you're thinking of, maybe the basic unit is something like a free trader or prime trader or whatever. And you pick which empire you're inside, like Federation or the IFC or whatever it is. And you have a variety of options in terms of like you're not necessarily beholden to follow orders. Like if you were in Starfleet, like you'd have to do what the fleet admiral says or whatever. But if you're like a private entrepreneur or whatever, then you're going to different star systems, or maybe you're searching for new minerals or something like that, or you're looking to trade, or maybe you decide that you want to defect to the Orion Pirates and be a prime trader instead of a prime trader. Or maybe you want to do some other kind of thing or whatever like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of those story routes might lead you to maybe you basically set up your own mercenary company or something like that.
Because
mm-hmm. There is stuff in the universe about companies that, like, you know how, like, if you look at the SSDs, there's SSDs for things like Prime Corvettes and Arms Cutters and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So those are not always operated by space navies or by National Guards. Some of them are operated by military contractors. You could be a company that's basically, like, one of the options that you could have is to try to set up such a company, and then one of the things you do is that when somebody else sets up a colony, you're paid to be the security for that colony. Or if you decide to go corrupt, you could be the one to, freeze the colony and then sell the proceeds to the Orion Pirates or whatever. But there's basically or you could maybe trade in your free trader for a free prospector. But then you are the one who's doing the mining. And you're the one who's basically setting up, bringing in resources to be able to, extract that mine and, have it shipped to a base station or something like that, whatever it is. So, there's basically, and because, the Federation's a big place and you're just in one small ship and so forth, you can't do everything. So you have a broader canvas in which to try to, you and other players and so forth, because you're not playing Federation or Empire where you're controlling the fate of the Federation or Klingons or whatever like that. You're just yourself and you're working on it and so forth. You're working on it best you can. And, there's little twists that you get put into it. If in Omega, for example, you could be a chloroform captain where you're literally the bridge crew because you're a giant tree. But you still need your keepers to help run the ship for you. And the chlorophons pretty much just go off and do their own thing. So you could decide for yourself, are you going to basically scoot around looking for XYZ or whatever? Or you could be an Iridani Questor and you're given a little ship or whatever like that, and you're told, these are the things that you have to do before you come home, and you just try and do them as you're going.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still basically a scale slightly up from Prime Directive, but maybe not quite at the full-on level that you'd see in a high-level operational game. So you're kind of you're below the level that you'll see in FME, if that makes sense. But you're basically kind of doing as best you can, and There's enough out there for it to be reasonably persistent. But the thing is, though, is that you'd still have to take account for things like the advance of technology. So, for example, if your game starts in Y100, then you've got an earlier Street Trader. But once you get to Y120, maybe you can, if you have enough credits set aside, you can upgrade to a modern Street Trader. And that makes it easy. You can travel faster on the map, and you can, your sensors are better in terms of detecting things, whatever. So, but yeah, I just kind of feel like, especially since this is a Star Trek Universe podcast, feel that whatever system or whatever scale that you're thinking of, it should be something that fits reasonably well within the universe. Now, I know that I think World Order is basically meant to be its own separate thing. It's not really part of the regular setting or whatever. But, I mean, depending on the scale that you're going for, you don't have to go somewhere else. You can let a player be in the Federation if they want to. And, you know, depending on how the progression of time goes on, like, the actual real-life player might basically, you know, move on to something else, you know, by the time you hit the end point of a certain era. So, like, you basically, you know, there's, like, all these alt options that the historical universe gives you. And that so far, like, there's not a lot of stuff that's out there for Prime Directive except for the Empire source books. And there's been talk about a thing called Federation Admiral, which is kind of like an operation level game, which is not kind of like below FME, but above SFBS icon. But even aside from that, I mean, like, I feel that if you give people the opportunity to invest in the universe, even if it doesn't necessarily have to be as the Emperor of the Klingon Empire or something like that, you can just be Emperor of your free trade or whatever, then, you know, I think people will gravitate to that. So at least that's my idea, at least. I mean, it doesn't really help in terms of, like, what the actual game, you know, step-by-step mechanics would be. But in terms of what those mechanics are meant to serve, I kind of feel that's kind of like a, you know, that might basically resonate more than having it being a more kind of generic setting that's more divorced from one of the settings that you can actually historically play in. That makes sense.
No, understood. And that's one way of going, which is basically going the approach of single player, as you know, as Doug was pointing out, when it comes to that, so give me a second. Doug is keeping calling me back. Give me a sec.
It is an interesting problem, but as has been mentioned, it is also a problem of scale.
Yeah.
Yay, you're back.
Yeah.
Maybe the telecom deity will be kind to us and let you stay around a while.
Hopefully.
And without the sacrifice of too many chickens.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's always the old joke in the server room is this, if the server was acting up, you would threaten to sacrifice a number of chickens, build a voodoo altar on top of it. There was a far side of some elk. I don't know if it was far side or somebody else, but it showed a server cabinet with some voodoo something or other on top of it. And she says, "Sir, I can't explain it, but ever since we put that up there, the server's been running 15% better."
Nice.
Okay. Well, with that, I think we'll wrap it up for the evening. I don't want to be sacrificing any chickens on computers. I'm not sure my wife would appreciate it that much.
90s era computer IT humor.
Realize I've been playing with computers since usually in 1980. So I've been doing it for a bit, and I remember those days of the mainframes, and going to Drex University, and they had their prime computers, which is for the old, older set, and I was thinking about a time where I was chatting with a friend of mine on the terminals, and they were just doing a chat session, and he got confused as all hell because of I started basically role playing right then and there, and it's like, right. What? It's like, what do you do? What was this? And since he couldn't really grasp it, I went, let's just forget about it.
Some people get it right away. Others need a little help.
Yeah.
And some people need a lot of help.
Yeah, definitely some people need more help than others. But anyhow, Doug, it's been lovely having you in and out all night. You have a good night.
Yay. That's why I have two kids. Bye.
Jeff, it's always a pleasure having you around. And obviously, I want you to keep safe driving out there. And
absolutely.
Okay, you have a good night.
Good night.
Gary, we'll pick up C6R next week, because that seems like an excellent topic to hit on. And obviously, it's always great to have you around.
Okay. Have a good night.
Okay. You have a good night.
Yeah.
So, obviously, I still like the idea that I have for it. At least the basic concept, which is the whole idea of asynchronous play with a live game, basically. Instead of having it so that it's a real-time interactive game, I don't want that. I want that asynchronousness of it. The idea of you give orders and those are carried forth, and then the game automatically runs on your behalf. Based on those orders. That's what I want. Now, that's the interactive concept that I want. Now, going to either individual person or fleets at the moment, in my mind, I've got fleets and how that would work. I'm not sure, but obviously there's a lot of details to work out on how that would work. So I have definitely quite a few hours of thinking to think about this and see how, what would it actually look like, and obviously look at the technical details of what would be required to do such a thing. Obviously it can be as a single player. Start off as a single player, but you'd have to have NPCs and things like that that were computer controlled that actually could interact with nobody else on the system, because without that, it becomes a very, very boring experience and something you want to avoid. It's like, why am I wasting my time? I'm bored to death doing this. Well, That's always one of those gotchas when it comes to doing anything. which is you have to scratch your own itch. If you don't enjoy what you create, why create it? So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.